Hello and welcome to another happy episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and this is the Obi episode, where he's not here. Joining me today is one dude, Johnny Metz.
Yo, what's up?
One dude, we're recording this a day late, and our virtual console section will reflect that. And basically, the only dude who I could get in the show today was Johnny.
Hey, I'm always ready. I'm always ready to throw down. You want some of this? You got it.
John is always ready to go, but unfortunately, many people on our staff are not.
But yeah, you know, they're giving this thing away as like a prize in Mafia to be on a podcast,
and really?
we're begging our staff members, and they're like, no. You know why Evan's not here? Because he's going to see Grindhouse for the second time in 3 days.
What? I haven't even seen that movie once. I heard it's awesome though.
Yeah, and he's going to see it the second time. I'm like, come on, dude. You can't stay home and just enjoy your memories of Grindhouse and come on the podcast. I mean, come on.
He said he is going to come back eventually, though. So
yeah, that's what I hear.
Hopefully, we'll see him back.
I've heard the same from other people as well.
Mm. You know, the only consistent person on the show is like me and you, Johnny.
It's crazy, man, and I'm like hella busy, you know, like yeah. I'm supposedly like semi-retired.
Seriously, and I'm supposed to be like registering for college. I'm supposed to be doing all this stuff with like my financial aid, but I still have time every week to do the show.
Serious? Yeah. I mean, exactly. Because we care about the children. Wu-Tang is for the children.
Well, okie doke. Let's get right into it, Johnny. What are you playing?
I haven't played a ton of stuff this week, but what I played was mostly Star Fox 64.
Ooh, and we're going to definitely get into that when we do Virtual Console. But, you know, briefly, how awesome is that awesome game?
So awesome.
Awesome, awesome. Anything else besides Star Fox?
I finished up Drake and Josh, and that review has been on for a while. And
4.5, right?
Yeah, I guess that's what I came up for it. It's not great.
It's a game.
listen to me telling people, don't buy it. Don't buy Drake and Josh.
Just don't.
There's a valuable service. Like you know, you really needed to come to a website to have someone tell you not to buy this game.
They had to come to a website to realize that Drake and Josh was a game.
Yeah, probably.
As for what I've been playing a little game called GarageBand, where I edit podcasts all the time, every day.
Oh, cool.
Because I actually edited and was featured in 3 podcasts in the last week. Like, I had to edit the podcast that went up last week. I had to edit the radio trivia. And then I also do a podcast at the Game Informer forums, where it's kind of like a community-based podcast. And I did 2 episodes of that this week.
Did you say One Up?
No, Game Informer.
But the first one, what was the first one you mentioned?
Radio Trivia, the podcast for this week, and then the 2 for GI Radio.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just all over the place with podcasting. And I was talking to Santa, we're bringing back God's Favorite Podcast.
Yeah.
Over at godsfavoriteblog.blogspot.com. So I'm just a podcast whore lately.
Well, yeah, I heard that possibly Evan and I are going to be on GFP, and we're going to argue
possibility.
Over movies.
That's what it's all about,
and
man.
And you know what? I bet we won't have any trouble convincing Evan to go on that podcast.
He loves being on GFP.
Yeah, but the one that he co-founded here, at Nintendo World Report.
No love for that.
Just can't be arsed.
We can't find either of the original hosts for this show. It's just hard to do.
I don't understand. I mean, it's so much fun to do it, you know? I look forward to doing this every
So do
week.
I. So
I enjoy I. it. I love the sound of my own voice.
So, as do I.
And I love the sound of your voice, Carl.
My sweet, sweet dulcet tones. Yeah, we actually had some comments.
Speaking of, you know, the talkback for last week's episode was... like devolved into this strange conversation about like whether our voices were tenor or bass or what.
Right. Someone accused me of tampering with the bass on our tracks. I'm like, no, that's just we're just men.
Turn the testosterone dial up a little bit.
Mancho. But no, we're rocking it normal.
pretty much.
So let's go right into Virtual Console. Yeah. And last week, Star Fox 64 came out, recommended for everyone, I hear.
Hells yeah.
Pretty awesome game. Do you do a barrel roll?
I do a barrel. Someone actually asked me in the forums, how do you do a barrel roll? And I'm like, you push the shoulder button twice. Just like in the original. Star Fox 64 is definitely the best game in the series. Anybody who says the original game is the best is like way too hardcore, and it does not represent any kind of normal person. Right. Because the original is not only like super hard, but basically really frustrating and not as well designed. 64, I can understand if you get a little annoyed by all the voice acting. Of course, at the time, it was such a huge volume and quality of voice acting that I don't think
anybody on a cart really... game too.
On the what?
On a cart game too, like on a cartridge.
Yeah, exactly, and it comes out very clear. It doesn't sound like crap. Mm. So I still enjoy the voices because they're not like Resident Evil 2 cheesy, Resident Evil cheesy even, but they're overly dramatic. Let's say that, and the writing is kind of like slightly off kilter. They're like things that people wouldn't actually say, but they don't sound completely ludicrous either. And it's just really funny to hear all the lines. All the bosses have great voice acting. They're all like really funny. So anyway, it's an amazing game and one of the best games on the system. Everybody should download it. It rocks. Yeah.
Fan friggin' tastic. Next up from last week, TMNT, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES.
Blech.
For an extra 100 points. You're paying an extra 100 points because if you're that much of a masochist, you deserve to be robbed of your extra dollar.
Yeah, you're not only paying an extra dollar, you're paying like an extra 1 or 2 years off your lifespan by playing that game.
It's pretty bad, as I understand.
Yeah.
No good. And then lastly, Dragon's Curse on the TurboGrafx-16 got a recommended for everyone.
That game looked really interesting to me, actually. Yeah, I haven't downloaded it, but the stuff I've read about it makes me... That's going to be one of those games that on a rainy day, I'll definitely check it out, you know?
It's supposedly... It's one of the Wonder Boy games. So it's like... Because you know how Wonder Boy has that strange history of, like... It's actually three games. It's the Wonder Boy series, the New Adventure Island series, and then the Dragon series.
I've heard... some things about it from Retronauts, but I don't understand it. I don't think
it's very confusing.
Want to understand the whole family tree of those games.
All you need to understand is that it's a good game and that you should play it.
Yeah. So, it looked really cool. It kind of, the screenshots and the description sounded to me like kind of a side-scrolling Zelda game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not exactly like Zelda 2, I guess, but more like a side-scrolling version of the first Zelda. Is what it kind of sounded like to me. And it kind of reminded me of this old PC game that I used to play called Zellion. Mm. And somebody gave it to me on a 3x5 floppy or something, like way back when, 10 years ago. And I at the time I thought of it and went to try to look it up online, couldn't find anything about it. So this game may not have actually existed. It may only be in my head. But if anybody has played Zellion and remembers kind of a side-scrolling adventure game for the PC like 10 years ago named Zellion, send us an email because I'd like to find out more about it because I don't remember a lot of details.
All right. And we're going to take advantage of our being recording this on a Monday because three new VC games came out today.
Yeah.
Bravo Man, Galaga, and Alex Kidd.
You know,
now, Johnny,
I think Alex Kidd is actually related to the whole Wonder Boy New Adventure Island thing.
Maybe,
as well.
I don't know. The only thing that comes to mind is that it used to be like Sega's mascot before Sonic, and there's a reason that Sonic replaced it. So
okay, maybe that's what I'm getting confused about. But I could have sworn someone was saying that it's actually related to that same crazy network of games, but I could be wrong. Yeah, I remember when I was young hearing about Alex Kidd, but I never played it. Is it the game where he changes hats and it like gives him different powers?
You know, I honestly don't know. If this game came out in 1989, which was the same year I was born, and like, so I don't necessarily have nostalgic memories of Alex Kidd as I was in my cradle. So that doesn't necessarily come to mind.
Yeah, I've never played it. And I've never even heard of Bravo Man. But that's pretty typical for TurboGrafx games that they come out and I've never heard of them. So it could be amazing. I don't even have the first clue. But Galaga, I can vouch for. Mm-hmm. It's been a very long time since I played the NES version, so it could be total crap, and I just don't remember. I remember renting it when I was a kid, but I it was way too long ago for me to remember any differences. But certainly the arcade Galaga is a game that I still play anytime I see it. Usually you see it in, like, movie theaters. Mm. Like, movie theaters tend to have these little arcades with, like, four games. And usually, like, 20th anniversary Galaga / Pac-Man is one of those. And the great thing about Galaga is that I can pop in 25 cents, because that's usually what those machines are priced at. Right. And Galaga is a game that I'm actually, oddly enough, like, actually pretty good at. And I can play it for 20 or 30 minutes on one quarter.
Nice.
And it's just, like, great way to kill time. It's totally addictive, and my eyes glaze over, and I stop blinking, and, like, and people always, like, I don't know, people always play Galaga, and they, like, the first thing they want to do is, like, get a ship stolen and then take it back so they can have double firepower. Right. And I never play that way, because it is nice to have double firepower. Like, you can totally obliterate the bonus rounds and everything. Mm-hmm. But it makes it so much easier to lose a ship that way, because your ship is twice as wide, and you're moving back and forth and dodging shots. It makes it almost impossible to dodge shots when you're that big.
Right.
And so you end up losing that life anyway, and you're basically just wasting a ship. And I think you can last a lot longer. This is just a pro tip for you kids who download the game and want to get far in it. You can last a lot longer and do better if you stick to one ship and just concentrate on preserving that. And at a certain point in the game, basically, there are so many shots coming down that you can't really pay attention to where you're shooting anymore. You just have to keep hammering on the button and just look at your ship and make sure that you don't run into any shots.
Got it. Well, I actually have a cool story about Galaga.
Ooh.
Back when I was in elementary school, my music teacher, Mr. Siegel, he really liked the music in that game. He was really, like, super obsessed with, like, MIDIs.
This would have been in, like, 1998.
When I was in middle school, I think this was, like, 97.
I was joking, by the way.
Yeah. Carl's a young kid, and
no, wait, you said you were born in 89, right?
89, right. And I was, like, in second or third grade, so, yeah.
You said middle school, though.
No, I meant to say elementary school. And he really liked the music from that game, so what he would do was, he would have these days where he just wanted to listen to the music in the game, so he would have the kids come up and play the game. And you would go, like, one, like, row by row, kids would just go up and play through the game. And I was never any good at the game because, you know, I was, like, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 at the time and not very good at hardcore shooters. So
did he have a Galaga machine in his classroom?
I don't recall.
Where was this happening? He was just had like a line of kids lined up to play Galaga for his amusement.
Basically,
this might have been like some weird sexual thing, dude, with your teacher.
I don't remember my pants
totally
being
got
on
off
at the time.
Watching little kids play Galaga, you know.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I'm dredging up demons from Carl's past now, and
oh god,
Carl's like, oh god, I don't want to do the podcast anymore.
I don't want to do the podcast anymore. Now I know why Evan doesn't come on the show. But moving on from that,
are you able to move on from that? Because that's what I'm worried about, Carl. You need to move on.
I gotta move on. My
you
life
gotta
must
move
continue.
On. You have to press on with your life.
I have to move on before I have more flashbacks. But we do have a listener mail from a very special person named Patch Kid.
I bet he has a patch over his eye.
Maybe.
And he's a kid.
Awesome. Maybe he's Alex the Kid, but with a patch over his eye.
Maybe that's one of the costumes that Alex Kid picks up to get new powers. I wonder what new powers he would get from having a patch over his eye.
I don't know. Emphysema?
Like a parrot?
Maybe. Patch Kid says, I wanted to know if I had a reason to worry about my friend. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Was he touched by Mr. Siegel, too?
Mm-hmm.
He has recently told me that his wish list of Wii games that he wanted to buy, and of course number one was Zelda. Okay. And then Wario, Excite Truck, and Sonic. Okay, first of all, Wario maybe, a definite no to the other two.
Oh, Excite Truck is awesome.
Let's not talk about that.
Excite Truck is
John and
so
I
freaking
disagree
awesome.
So Yeah. Like, there's such a huge disagreement about me and Johnny about this game, but yeah, whatever. And then next on his list was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Not the NES game, the new game that comes from the movie.
Let me guess that your friend is 7 years old?
Maybe. I don't know. And he goes on, he says, I have always thought that trademark games were basically horrible, but there are always the games like Spider-Man 2, which had good gameplay to it. But most trademark games are awful. He told me he wanted TMNT because it used the nunchuck, which most games right now do not use.
That's his reason?
I guess. For wanting, I want to use this other part of the controller, so I'm going to go pay $50.
Well, to be fair, he probably took a lot of effort to track down that nunchuck, because they're... at various times since launch, they've been really hard to come by. So I can kind of understand that. It's kind of like people buying crappy movies for their Blu-ray players just because they want to use it for something.
Like Casino Royale. Oh, burn.
I just saw Casino Royale for the first time on like Friday night. I thought it was great.
I haven't seen it. I'm just.
Yeah, I thought it was like a really damn good movie. So don't crack.
I'm not trolling here.
Don't troll.
Okay. And then he says, finally, could you please name some good games that use the nunchuck, or a good game equal to using the nunchuck, and explain to him about trademark games being horrible if I am right about them? Well, first of all, not all trademark games are bad. Like you said yourself, Spider-Man 2 was really good.
It is.
And there was that game on the Xbox, Chronicles of Riddick, Butcher Bay.
Sure, yeah. I've heard that it's good. I haven't played it.
Glowing reviews, you know, and it's based on the licensed property. And the game, I think, is actually more popular than its source material.
Well, the movie Chronicles of Riddick is pretty freaking awful. It's like, yeah, it's totally average by big budget sci-fi standards, mm-hmm, but compared to Pitch Black, which was the movie that came before it, it's terrible. Pitch Black is like a work of genius, and it was made on a tenth of the budget, and they just like ruined everything that made it great in Chronicles of Riddick. It's really sad. Yeah.
Well, I do have a couple recommendations if you want to use your nunchuck. SSX Blur uses the nunchuck and is a very good game. And uses the nunchuck pretty well. You tilt it to kind of swipe from side to side. And yeah, that's a pretty good game.
And actually, if your friend is particularly interested in licensed games, not a wonderful game, but a good game that uses the nunchuck quite a bit would be Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Not only do you control your characters with the joystick and you jump with Z and things like that, but also you actually control the camera by tilting the nunchuck left and right, so you really have to pay attention to the nunchuck and what you're doing with it to play the game, and it's licensed, so if that's his thing.
Exactly. And yeah, there you go. So not all licensed games are bad, and there are games out there that use the nunchuck and they are good. So your friend shouldn't be getting TMNT. Should be getting other games.
I haven't played TMNT, but
It doesn't take a genius to know that it's probably not a work of art.
I've seen a couple reviews that were really brutal.
Yeah.
So
apparently the GBA game is the only good version.
Yeah, that's according to GameSpot at least.
Yeah.
That's I tend to go there a lot for my multi-platform reviews.
Yeah. And he says, P.S. He has the games I listed except for TMNT, so he already bought Excitetruck, which I'm sure he already regrets.
Sweet.
That's going to clear us up for listener mail, so when we come back, we're going to be talking about the news.
With the Wii now out, one thing remains very certain about the state of dancing. It must be translated to a video game. Simply must, whether it is Samba de Amigo or Dance Dance Revolution. The Wii must be the home of dancing salsa on the home consoles, so that one day I, Antonio Banderas lookalike, may be able to share a glass of wine, a nice dinner, and then home for some nice Wii dancing. This must happen, and it is why I have hijacked this episode of Radio Free Nintendo. Now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Alright, and we're back for the news. Obviously, the biggest news within the past week is all about Resident Evil. And first we've got Resident Evil 4 is going to be on Wii, and it's going to have true widescreen and the PS2 content that was deprived of the GameCube version when it released. in 2005, which is great. And
yeah.
Not only that, it's also going to be at a budget price at $29.99.
Wow, Capcom learned their lesson.
I am still not completely... I'm still not hopeful. I think that they're going to find a way to screw us and that they're going to be porting the PS2 game.
I see, that doesn't make much sense to me because they already have the code and everything on GameCube hardware, and I have to think it's easier to move a GameCube game up to Wii than it is to move a PS2 game to Wii, although clearly neither one is a particularly difficult task. But it makes more sense to me because the Ada stuff, you know, the character models and the environments are all, they're already in the GameCube game. So they just have to string the scenario together. And it, to me, that makes more sense than going from the PS2 version to bring... Because they're already having to recode things for the controls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they're already in the guts of the game. It's not that big of a deal to throw together that the Ada material.
You're right, that makes total sense, which is exactly why Capcom won't do it.
Well, my biggest fear for this game is not that. I think that's somewhat irrational. But my biggest fear is this claim of true widescreen, because this was listed on EB Games, their website, the retail website. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly the way the information is laid out, it looks like information that came directly from Capcom. It doesn't look like EB just made it up. It's too specific. It contains price, exact release date, things like that.
Right.
So I'd like to think that's true, but the screenshots that we've seen in Famitsu don't bear that out. They really they still have letterboxing. So that's a true widescreen. I mean, it doesn't have much bearing on me. I don't have a widescreen TV, and I've said on this podcast before why I don't have one. Because they don't film movies in 16:9, so it's a completely ridiculous ratio to build a TV to. But I just am a little skeptical about that claim until I actually see it, because that it would be a significant performance-wise, that would be a significant upgrade over the GameCube and PS2 versions, because they both ran in mandatory letterbox mode, and that was because the graphics engine was so taxing on the systems that they couldn't actually fill up the entire screen.
Yeah.
So they actually blocked off the top and bottoms of the screen to save processing power, kind of similar to how Final Fantasy III on DS turns off the bottom screen so it can apply both processors in the DS to creating very nice 3D graphics on one screen. So this would actually be, even though this is yet another GameCube port to Wii, it would be one of the few ports to Wii from another system that would actually be graphically enhanced over the original version, and that is a positive sign. I mean, it's a small step forward for porting to Wii, but it is very nice to see, and the budget price obviously is fantastic, and it totally throws people over the edge to say, I actually, if the controls are good, I would actually buy this game again for $30.
I probably wouldn't.
I'm considering it, because I've actually lately been wanting to play Resident Evil 4 again. I still have it on GameCube, I just haven't had the time to pull it out and play it. But if the new controls really feel different, and I think they would with Wii pointing and everything, at $30 with the Ada content, which I haven't played, I definitely didn't buy the crappy PS2 version, all the gimped graphics and everything.
Have you seen the PC version? It looks even worse.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about Capcom games on PC. But it is tempting to me, actually, especially if I can trade in my GameCube version for for $10 towards the $30 PS Wii version.
So. Well, I remember when Resident Evil 4 came out, I bought the GameStop like special bundle, which was it came in this huge tin case. You got like an autographed laser cell with letter of authenticity or whatever, and it came with like this little books, and it was like a really great package. But honestly, while Resident Evil 4 is definitely a great game, I don't think that playing through the Ada missions and you know wagging the remote around just to use a knife is really worth $30. That's just me though.
It's arguable. Certainly if you don't already have the game
of
the previous systems, this is, I mean, you should be knocked over the head for not wanting to buy this game. But Resident Evil 4 is one of the best games ever made, ever.
Oh, definitely, absolutely.
So if you don't already own the game, put down your pre-order money now for the Wii version.
Because definitely. If you've
it's ridiculously good.
If you've never played Resident Evil 4, you owe it to yourself to buy this game.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, and also Resident Evil, Umbrella Chronicles revealed as a first-person shooter.
Somewhat less exciting than the port.
Yeah, and a little more cause for concern.
Yeah, a little. Yeah. I think the problem here is not that people don't want to give Capcom some benefit of the doubt when it comes to applying new gameplay styles to Resident Evil, because it did work so well with RE4. Mm-hmm. The problem is that this is not a new gameplay style. Capcom has made multiple first-person shooter games out of the Resident Evil franchise before, and they've all been really
terrible.
Bad. Really bad. So, it's just hard to be terribly enthusiastic about this one. I mean, it could be a totally different development system. We don't know yet. We haven't really seen it in motion. The graphics look fine, but I'm very worried about Umbrella Chronicles because I'm afraid it will turn out to be like Resident Evil Dead Aim and Survivor and whatever all that crap was. Yeah.
Yeah. It's if you've seen footage of that game, it's not a pretty picture, man. It's bad news.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we're going to hold out judgment, and I mean, the screens definitely look nice. Like, it's a good-looking game, at least.
Sure, yeah.
So, at least Capcom's got that going for them. But, in good news that can't be spun either way, Nintendo raises sales target from $7.58 billion to $8.14 billion. And Nintendo am rich.
I'm glad you threw that in there.
I did. I decided to, yes. They made a lot of money. What can I say?
That is a whole lot of money.
I mean, that's baby making money.
That's... You're going to make some babies up in here. That's billions of dollars. I mean, that's in one quarter?
Yeah.
Is that only for one quarter, or is that for the whole fiscal? That's got to be for the whole year.
Yeah, it's probably fiscal year, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but regardless, that's billions of dollars. I mean, holy crap. So, yeah, they're going to make $500 million more than they were expecting. That's pretty significant.
And apparently it's all due to DS just being crazy. It's a crazy system. It sells now in America it's catching on like it is in Japan, where like you can't find them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like literally.
I've heard. Yeah.
Like they were so easy to find pretty much before Christmas, and then once holiday kicked in, you couldn't find them. Period.
Yeah.
Like,
and what games came out in the holiday season that suddenly made DS like?
You know what it was?
I think it was New Super Mario Brothers being remarketed.
Perhaps that. Also, I think it was just the DS Lite's first Christmas.
True. Yeah. I mean, the DS Lite is like fantastic. I mean, it's an incredible system, and I'm glad it's doing well.
Yeah,
it's just, I guess, for those of us who adopted it early, it's a little bewildering to see the continued fervor over it. In fact, more fervor than there was when it first came out. But it's just a good reminder that the mass market, and DS definitely appeals to the mass market and not just gamers.
Yeah.
They don't really care about the day things come out. They care about being able to go and pick it up when they're interested in it. And Nintendo has marketed these things incredibly well. And I'm a little surprised. You know, I was skeptical about the DS when it was first announced.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really impressed with the way that it's turned out to be so dominant. And the same goes for Wii, honestly. But like you said, this increase in profit expectations is due to DS, because Nintendo from the very start basically predicted they would sell every single Wii that they made up through the end of the fiscal year, and certainly they have.
Yeah.
And I think the only surprising thing there is, honestly, I wasn't so sure that they would be able to do that. I was one of the guys predicting that there's no need to pre-order your Wii because you'll be able to go pick it up a week after launch, and... Oops.
We certainly ate humble pie.
Yeah, I mean, compared to previous launches of Nintendo hardware, that was a fair prediction to make. I'm really still taken aback by the popularity of Wii. But Nintendo had expected this all along, to their credit. So I don't know how the software sales stack up to what they were predicting, but they were predicting pretty big success for Wii. So they've, at this point, they're pretty confident, and they have every right to be.
They're riding high.
Yeah.
All right, and next up, surely everyone has heard about Rock Band, the new game from Harmonix, the makers of Guitar Hero, now owned by MTV Games. Rock Band was announced for the Xbox 360 and PS3. No Wii announcement, though. However, IGN secured a comment from EA saying that Rock Band, you know, surely it will eventually come to all platforms of relevance, and Wii is certainly relevant, so we might see it.
Sounds like, though, it might be maybe 2008.
More than likely, yeah. And I mean, Rock Band in general might be 2008.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't seen anything about it, so it's hard to even guess how far along it is. But the certainly, you can think that maybe the Wii controllers might reduce the cost of some of the peripherals that they're selling for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the guitar will just be a shell that you can plug your remote into, and that way they don't have to put all the wireless technology in it.
Right.
Or the you may not even need to buy the drums. You can just use two remotes. And it just depends on, you know, where you're pointing them, what direction you're pointing them, or how you've got them tilted or whatever, or what button you're holding down.
Yeah.
Who knows? So that's exciting. What worries me a little is that the game seems very online-focused, and, you know... Nintendo is not. Exactly. Nintendo is not online-focused. So that worries me, because the cool thing about Rock Band seems to be that you can put together... You don't need to own all the accessories. You can buy just, say, the microphone, and then find people wherever else in the country who own the other things, and you can make a complete band out of that. And that's really exciting. And I, you know, I really am looking forward to playing this game with some of my friends on the staff and otherwise. But I don't know if Nintendo's online capabilities are going to be up to that. We just still don't know, and we should know by now. But I'm not going to.
Want a guitar player? Hope you have your friend code ready. Mm. That's all I'm going to say. Miyamoto has said that he wants third parties to stop putting third string teams on Wii games.
Booyah.
I agree.
Your face, Ubi.
Yeah, seriously. Who does Ubi's games for Wii, honestly?
I don't know. It's just like they're made in sweatshops or something.
Probably Ubisoft Shanghai. Their, like, chef is doing the games.
I don't know. I don't want to disparage the people who are working on these, because a lot of times what you hear about when you talk to developers of bad games is that they knew the game was not in good shape. They really wanted to make it better, but the corporate overseers basically said, well, you know, too bad. This game ships in 3 weeks, and you better get the bugs out of it.
Yeah,
so it's not necessarily the fault of the people who are actually working on the game. It tends a lot of times to be the fault of the people who are selling the game, because they don't really care about when the game's finished. They care about, you better have this thing out before Christmas.
And the worst part about it is that these games miraculously sell.
Yeah, some of them do.
Like Call of Duty 3 sold better on Wii than it did on PS3.
Yeah, but there are a whole lot more Wiis out there than there are PS3s.
That is true. Fair enough.
More. That doesn't shock me at all, really. Virtua Fighter 5 would have sold better on Wii than it did on PS3. If they could have gotten it to run on Wii, of course.
Well, it's probably not.
They could have used the Virtua Fighter 3 TB engine or something.
Or the 1 engine, you never know.
Yeah.
One last story.
Actually, Virtua Fighter 1 is on Virtual Console in Japan. Because
it
came
is,
out on
Genesis.
I've heard the Genesis version is total crap.
Yeah.
But
it's out, at least,
in Japan.
Yeah, it'll be there.
Yeah.
But one more story. There was an interview with Reggie Fils-Aimé, who was talking about Little Big Planet. And he said that he had his eye on the developers of Little Big Planet. And that, unfortunately, Phil Harrison got to him first.
That's
you never
a,
know.
That's a really, that's mm-hmm. not the thing you would expect to hear a president of a company talking about, really.
Yeah.
It's he's basically admitting defeat to another company in an acquisition.
Essentially, yeah. But, you know, it's at least he's being honest.
Yeah. I think Reggie is, in general, pretty straightforward, actually, about things. That's why he doesn't give out many interviews.
Because he doesn't want to have to tell people the truth. But you know, and it's kind of weird to picture Little Big Planet as a Wii game.
Not really. Why?
It's a very online focused game. It's a very community based online focused game, and Wii, frankly, is not an online community focused console.
Well, it's I think for the purposes of sharing user created levels, the Wii is perfectly suited for that. You can already do that in Elebits.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as online play, yeah, that would have been more unlikely to have survived on a Wii version, but that stuff would work even better in person, and Nintendo's all about that. Wii is all about getting three or four people in a room and having them play a game together cooperatively like that. I think Little Big Planet would have worked just fine on that. Graphically, I don't see a whole lot being done that couldn't have been done slightly worse on Wii. So it's not a graphically amazing game by any means.
Lots of motion blur.
Take off that motion blur, and it would run just fine on Wii. So
perhaps, but I mean, it's not that much
of a stretch, is all I'm saying.
You might not be able to fit as many assets as well.
Because of the storage media.
Yeah.
Well, there are ways around that.
Yeah, low res, you know. But I mean, I suppose
you could maybe have remote storage of your user created levels through the online community.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know. We won't. Yeah.
We will never know. And that wraps us up for the news. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Metroid. So stay tuned.
Editor Carl Castagneda here. You recognize this music? It's from The Legend of Zelda's title screen. Now, that was an easy one. Imagine the most obscure Nintendo game ever, and then imagine that someone pulled a few of its theme songs. You think you can handle that? If you're up to the challenge, check out Radia Trivia, hosted by Nintendo World Report's Michael TYP Cole. Every other week, TYP puts your skills to the test with more game music in a single night than you've heard in years. If you're lucky, you may end up with a fabulous prize. So head on over to the site and check out a trivia section. You might just be the next big winner.
Alright, and we're back for our feature, Chasing Metroid. What's up with all of these damn delays? Well, Johnny, what's up? you work at Retro, you tell us.
Dude, I kind of wish I worked at Retro, except, I would never want to be a game developer. They work way too hard for very little money and almost no recognition.
You'll supply all the harmonica-based tracks.
Yeah, hey, it would be cool to work on the music, but I don't think harmonica would fit in very well with Metroid music. So anyway, maybe if they do a sequel to Barnyard, I could help out with that.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, Metroid Prime 3 is a game that I knew about a long time ago, and I kind of knew some of the things that they were looking at doing way back in 2005. So like right after Metroid Prime 2 came out, they've been working on this game since then. The day that Echoes shipped, maybe just before 2004. In planning,
yeah.
And at the time in 2005, the gist that I got was that they were still in planning stages. I don't know what kind of technology they were doing. They were very much, you know, they did show that trailer at E3 that year of Metroid on Revolution, but which was just like this like crappy teaser trailer of the ship flying over Samus. It was basically the Halo 3 trailer. It was like exactly the same trailer, except nobody gave a crap about it when it was Metroid Prime 3, and everybody blew their heads off when they did it for Halo 3, when it was just like just as silly. But anyway, at that time, that teaser that they showed back at E3 2005 was basically a placeholder. I don't think they had any kind of working game code at that point, except you know, they were maybe modifying the Metroid 2 engine and trying to see what they could do with it with more processor power. But
right.
that trailer was basically just fabricated. It was just for show, just to let you know that they were working on another game. Mm-hmm. And the gist that I got from talking to various people at that point was that they were very much looking at the nature of the Samus character and trying to hone in on how to make... Because I think they felt like part of the problem with the sales of the Metroid Prime games, the first one did okay because it had a hell of a lot of buzz around it, but the second game, not nearly so well. And I think they feel like part of the problem is that Samus is really not much of a character. She doesn't have any personality whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And you never see her, and... It's just a problem, and the odd thing is, if you look at a game like Halo, Master Chief is the most generic pile of crap character design I've ever seen. I can't imagine how they've written books about him. It completely boggles my mind. But for some reason, there's something that they do in that series that makes people appreciate him as a character and associate a personality with him, even if it's not explicitly told through the game. And I haven't played the Halo games enough to figure out how they do that. I'm not really a fan of them, but I think that Retro was looking at the success of that series and saying, well, that's part of it. Obviously multiplayer is a big part of it, and they may be looking at it. They certainly told me that they were interested in multiplayer for Metroid, but they would not do it the way they did it for Echoes. And I'm not sure how many people really played the multiplayer mode in Echoes, but it's actually really fun for a couple hours. I mean, it's just not very... There's not much depth or variety to it. But it's certainly a lot of fun. With four people, I mean, we've had, like, ridiculous fun times with it at E3. But it just it doesn't hold up over time. It's not that it's poorly designed, but there's just not much to it. But they felt like that was just kind of an experiment. I don't think they put a whole lot of time or effort into the multiplayer mode. It was kind of a secondary effort. And I think they're open to the possibility of doing some kind of multiplayer in 3. In fact, that may be part of the reason that it's been delayed so much.
I honestly think that is the entire reason why it's been delayed.
The entire reason? I don't know.
Because if you think about
that.
It, Metroid Prime 3 was built to be a launch game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying...
They were saying at E3 last year,
launch game. So, I'm thinking at E3 was probably... The single player was at least probably 80 to 90% done.
I would not count on that. Let me tell you another thing that Brian Walker, the producer of the Metroid Prime games, told me. He's like basically the head honcho at Retro over those games. He's not the head honcho at Retro, but he is the top tier guy who's directly supervising those games. Mm-hmm. He told me that at E3 2002, when they first showed Metroid Prime for GameCube, it came out at the end of 2002. They had the entire first section of the game playable at E3, so it was the whole part in the space frigate before Samus lands on the planet. Mm-hmm. And he told me that part of the game, which was so impressive and totally turned around everyone who played it on the idea of a first-person Metroid game, that was literally the only thing they had done on the game at that point. So everything else in the game, including reworking quite a bit of the Space Frigate demo for the final game, but completely everything after that, the story and everything, was done between May and November. So these guys are fast, and they are hardcore developers. It's unbelievable if you think about the amount of content in that game and how polished and incredible it is that they put it together in that span of time. It's completely mind-blowing to me to even think about it. So I know they were on a less cramped schedule for Metroid Prime 2. They had more that they could have shown at the time that they didn't at E3 2004 when they showed that game. But with 3, I don't know necessarily that they had 90% of the game done at E3. I mean, their past history would say that that's not necessarily the case. That's all I'm saying. So it may be that, you know, it may be a case like Twilight Princess, where they showed it at E3 2005, and it seemed like it was very far along, and we totally believed them when they said it was coming out at the end of that year. But as we learned at GDC from Anuma's presentation there, the game really was not very far along at all at that point. And he became very worried about the possibility of getting it completed in time for Christmas that year, and that's why they delayed it. You know, we always assumed that it was basically because of the Wii version, but as it turns out, completely throwing aside any plans to put it on Wii, Twilight Princess would not have been ready to be released at the end of 2005. It simply was not even close to being complete.
Right.
So a lot of times what they expect to be able to get done by the end of the year as of May is, you know, they get into things and they realize there's a lot more to it than they thought. It's totally possible.
Well, I'm just saying that if, you know, I think that there's a very different mindset in thinking, okay, we're going to ship this game in 5 months versus we're going to ship this game in 17 to 18 months. I think if you have the mindset of shipping it in 5 months, you're basically like you're on that peak of gameplay design where you're kind of like you're doing the real meat of it, where it should be starting to wrap up within a few months.
Well, I think these delays are probably the result of a lot of things. Certainly, I think their feedback at E3 was that the game looked like a GameCube game, and that they felt that was a problem because obviously they pride themselves on having high-end graphics, and they probably feel like in order to compete with games like Halo, they need to really make this look a cut above everything else on Wii. And I don't think it did at E3 last year. I think the best-looking Wii game at E3 last year was Super Mario Galaxy, which was probably not even as far along in development as Metroid was at the time.
Probably not.
So I think certainly they are probably going back to look at the graphics engine for the game. They want to make it look distinctly like a Wii game and not like a GameCube game. And I think that's admirable. I don't know if I agree with delaying the game just for that, but I don't think they delayed the game just for that. I think they got a lot of feedback on the control method. And the controls were such at E3 that if you are a hardcore gamer, you could get used to it within maybe half an hour to an hour of playing and could probably do fine for the rest of the game like that. But I think they really are concerned about marketing the game to a much broader audience than that. And so they probably have taken quite a bit of time to go back and figure out how do you really make a truly natural, intuitive control method for a first-person shooter on the Wii in a way that none of these other World War II games or Red Steel or whatever have managed to do yet. To make it really mainstream, something that anybody can pick up and do without having to think about where they're pointing the remote or turning it or pointing it too far away so it gets off the screen or adjusting sensitivities and things like that. So I think that's probably a big part of it, because if you look closely at the wording of what Reggie said about Metroid Prime 3, about the delay, he had an interview with someone last week where he talked about why the game is not coming out in June, as they had said earlier, or Q2, basically, which ends in June. And he said that the reason that they keep holding it back is basically not only that they want to make it perfect, which doesn't surprise me coming from Retro, but at the same time, I think the first two Metroid Prime games are very close to perfect, if that's even possible. And so I don't think they typically historically have needed a tremendous amount of time to make these games very highly polished, as we would expect. So I think there's more to it than that. And he said that the other part of the reason that these games have been delayed so much is that they're working on ways to make it appeal to a much, much, much larger audience than the first two games did. So I think part of that is probably some kind of new multiplayer component, and it may be something that we can't even imagine, because coming from the Metroid series, I have to think it's going to be weird. It should be weird. It should be different than Halo multiplayer. And it should be online, and that probably factors into the delays as well, because the online infrastructure is not ready yet for a full-featured, robust online multiplayer shooter, which, if they're going to put multiplayer in it, I have to think they're going for something that's going to be really, really nice, really impressive like that. But also, they want to make this game accessible. And Metroid Prime 1 and 2 I don't think they're very accessible. I think it's a game that it looks not terribly complicated from the interface, but the actual gameplay design of it and the way the controls work, the nuances of the control, are complicated. When you start to have to deal with things like trying to use the R shoulder button to point up and then quickly let go of that and hit the L button so you can lock onto something that's above you, that's hard to do even for a hardcore gamer. It takes a lot of coordination mm-hmm. and quick timing, and even to realize that that's what you have to do in order to lock onto something that's above you is a problem. So definitely. I think they're probably looking at a lot of things like that and trying to see how can we make this the next Metroid Prime game that's of the same quality and depth, but make it appeal to a far, far larger audience. And I don't know the answer to that. It's a tough question. But it may have involved really going back to the drawing boards and kind of redesigning this game.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, Johnny, obviously you have much to say about Metroid.
Yeah, sorry. I do have an interesting history with this series and talking to the people who make it. And
You're sure you don't work at Retro?
I definitely don't work at Retro. I just I'm familiar with the development of the series, and I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by it. With the entire game design, I've talked with these guys at length about the way the worlds are put together and the way that the sequence of upgrading is determined and things like that. I think it's completely fascinating. The Metroid series to me is one of the original unique gameplay designs. Mm-hmm. Before Metroid, there's really nothing like Metroid in the way right. that the game flows and is structured. And they've managed to maintain that through the Metroid Prime series, Hunters notwithstanding. And it's kind of amazing to have maintained that gameplay design through the 3D. And I think they're very concerned about upholding that game design while pushing forward on the formula. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'll say is that I hope they got some negative feedback at E3 last year about the characters talking so much and there being so much character interaction, because I hope they're going to find a way to make Samus a more accessible character and a more sympathetic character without having her carry on extended conversations with non-player characters, because that is not the Metroid series, and it really comes off as being kind of hokey. And it reminded me of Hunters in a very bad way, where, you know, you have bounty hunters helping each other out and showing each other secret passageways and things, and that's not how bounty hunters work. That really doesn't tie into what a bounty hunter does. And the weird thing was that they seemed to be enhancing and pushing further this concept of Samus as a bounty hunter, whereas that's really never been emphasized in the previous games. So not only are they pushing this role for her, and I can understand why they would do that, because it's a cool job and it's something that might appeal to a broader audience, like the whole Boba Fett thing or whatever. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, if you're going to make Samus really a bounty hunter and give her bounties and she's going to be chasing people and things like that, you can't have her making nice with competing bounty hunters. You can't do it. That's not the way it works. So you can't. The whole situation with that in the E3 demo last year was very off-putting to me, and I hope they're dealing with that and making it more natural. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Johnny, we're coming up on our time limit.
Sorry.
So it's okay. It's okay.
It's very easy for me to ramble about Metroid.
That's good though, because you're the Metroid guy. I'm not so much of a Metroid guy, so it's good to have you on. But before we go, I want to ask you: when do you think Metroid 3 will ship? Metroid Prime 3. When do you think it will ship?
At this point, I'm thinking it's going to be around the holiday season of this year.
So November, December, you think?
Yeah, and along with that, I think probably either Mario or Smash Brothers will be delayed, and that's no big shock, really.
Galaxy definitely will be delayed. I will bet money that Galaxy will be delayed.
See, I honestly think it's more likely that Smash Brothers will be delayed because of the online issues that they're having to work out and the size of the game and the fact that it was only started in development about a year ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's if it's going to be such a huge marquee game for them, it seems like it should have been in development longer. So I think Mario is farther along in development than Smash Brothers, mm-hmm. but of course they're different kinds of games. They have different development cycles. So it's kind of a toss up, but I think one of those games will be delayed into well into 2008, probably not January or February, but much farther into the year than that. And I think Metroid will kind of fill up that slot. And if it'll be an interesting situation, because once again you'll have a Metroid Prime game up against a new Halo game, and it'll be very interesting to see if all this extra time Retro has taken with it to do whatever they're doing to make it Metroid appeal to a broader audience will make it more competitive with Halo than it was last time, which was pretty disastrous.
And on that note,
on the word disastrous, let's end the show.
On the word disastrous, we truly do wish the best of luck to Retro Studios.
Absolutely, I want 3 to be incredible, and I think it will.
And we hope it does sell very well, because it will surely be a great game.
Oh yeah.
All right, and that about wraps it up for Radio Free Nintendo. I'd like to thank Johnny for talking at length about Metroid.
You're certainly welcome. If we want to do a sequel discussion about Metroid Prime next week,
I
let me know.
I think we probably could. And so this ends yet again another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. But before we go, I would like to bid a fond farewell to one of our staff members who is no longer at the website. He's not dead. He's just no longer with NWR. Dan Bloodworth, our content editor,
is now... He's working a real job now, so he might as well be dead.
Yeah. He's working over at GameTrailers.com. He's going to be, reviewing games, previewing games, and it's a really sweet gig, and no one deserves that more than Dan.
Totally.
He works really, really hard, and so Dan, he couldn't be on the show, but we do bid a fond farewell, and we wish you the best of luck at your new job.
Yep, totally, man.
Okie doke, guys. I'd like to thank Johnny for stopping by. And
Again.
And I hope to see you guys next week along with more people.
With more hosts.
Agreed. Alrighty, guys. See you later.